Save big money on everything for your next bathroom project. Now at Menards. Upgrade your bathroom with Max. With more than 1,000 showers, bathtubs, and surrounds, you're sure to find exactly what you need to add luxury and style to your bathroom. Save big on our entire selection of Max bathroom products. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big.
Guys, welcome back to another episode of Be Here for a While. I have one of my favorite people on my podcast today.
Thank you.
I talk very highly of you.
Do you really?
I see you very rarely, but when I talk about you, I talk very highly of you.
I definitely would like to say likewise. I have always
really?
Spoken very highly
Thank
of you.
You.
Yes.
That's so nice.
Anyway, it's not surprising.
I knew I invited you over here for a reason. he's 11. I'm just going to read your bio because it's fascinating. He's a Lebanese American comedian who is creating unity through laughter, and he will explain this. You're smart, you're hilarious, and you have so much insight about the Middle East and the world, and that's what a lot of your comedy is about. And I've always found these stories to be fascinating. You've recently been featured on Daily Beast, Chicago Tribune named you one of the top 10 comedians to watch, and you single-handedly created the comedy movement in Beirut, and you were on the cover of Rolling Stone in the Middle East. That's pretty cool.
Not bad.
That's pretty cool. It's Rolling Stone. I mean,
yeah.
I'm so obsessed with just rock stars in general and the magazine Rolling Stone that if I ever got on the cover of Rolling Stone, I just feel like I'd be like, okay, I'm done. Yeah, this is it.
Well, I got on Rolling Stone Middle East, and then I figured, well, there's still Rolling Stone US, right?
Yeah. So you moved here to take over America when you didn't need to. You could have just.
Well, I figured if I came here. And in the Middle East, I used comedy to bring people together.
Yeah.
So I figured I'd come here. It's going to be a walk in the park here because America is so unified.
Yeah.
This was two and a half. This was 2.5 years ago.
And then we screwed up.
And then I was like, okay.
This was a little more difficult than I thought.
Yeah, this is ridiculous. So, but no, it's I think it's good that I'm here during this time because I think my comedy will resonate better now.
Yeah.
When people can find that there is in the jokes that I tell that you can draw parallels with what's going on here right now.
By the way, I just realized I forgot to say your name.
Oh,
Nemer. What's your last name? I don't even know. Nemer.
Yeah, I don't. I dropped the last name. My last name is Abu Nasar.
No, I'm not even gonna.
It's
try
two
it.
Words
Abu
exactly.
Nasar.
Yeah, there you go. You nailed it.
Nemer Abu Nasar.
Nemer means tiger, and Abu Nasar means father of the victorious. So,
oh yeah, I could have guessed that. Yeah, yeah. It seems like it translates.
I just dropped the last name because I didn't want people to come into the show expecting something.
Well,
they hear
your first
Abu.
Name is very distinct.
That's it. It's confusing enough for them to be like, is he Indian? Is he Arab? Is he weird? What is he like? Just some weird American name.
Why is there no E after the M?
Exactly. How do you pronounce it? I want their focus to be on the confusion of the name rather than, oh, he's an Arab. This show isn't for me.
Yeah.
Because I know that Arab comics
are. You don't really look all that Arab either.
No, I don't. So I try to make it. Like, you know, it could be a good time for you. Give it a shot. Come in a bit more open-minded. Yeah. That's why I dropped the last name.
But I know you are clearly Arab because you walked into my apartment and noticed that there's a little bit of, like, Persian decor happening, which was not my fault.
Are you sure you want to stick with a little bit?
Okay, so I have a lot of gold furniture, right?
But it's just the gold color.
It was fine.
But it's very tasteful.
Until I moved into this apartment and the owner had put up gold sconces on the wall. There's absolutely no reason to have them where they are.
But the lighting is great.
Yeah, okay. And a gigantic gigantic gold mirror was already in the apartment. And
this
I just
is true. But with the gold couch.
It's a lot.
It is. I literally, like, if your name, I swear to God, it's very tasteful, though, which is where you separate yourself from Saudis and Persians.
Yeah, because they do like rhinestones and stuff on things,
they
too.
They go ballistic.
Yeah, they go all out.
They're like, did you realize I have money yet? No.
Yeah.
did you look to the right of you or the left of you? Because I have a shit ton of money.
I just put money just on a table so you can just see it. I just have $100 bills laying around.
There's
randomly.
So much money. Yeah, exactly. Do you have any debt I could forgive? just so you could understand.
So awesome.
How much oil money I have.
Like, hey, I respect it.
Hey, nothing against it. Just throw some of that money my way.
I love your stories about growing up in Lebanon as a child and also doing comedy there. Can you tell me a little bit about, well, you grew up there in times of war and tell me more about that. And then I want to hear more about the comedy.
Well, if you live in the Middle East at any point in time, you're living during times of war.
Okay, good point.
There's no, right?
So unfair.
Well, it's my dad told me, he's like, I was born in war and I'm going to die in war. The funny thing about Middle Eastern
war. You guys
war,
are so used to it. Like, it's like you're almost like kind of like you're numb to it almost.
Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't say numb to it. It's just like.
Or it's just a part of your life.
It's a part of, it's like, it's just like Amazon.com is now for a lot of people. Like, it exists.
Yeah.
This is how it impacts you.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So, my father, when he told me that, the funny thing, the difference between Middle Eastern war and other war is that even though I've been through maybe 10 or 11 different wars, I've never fired a gun at anyone. So we don't necessarily fight in the wars
because
we're just the
They're
battlefield
happening around you.
They're just happening in the country, around the country, sky, ground. We just hang out at home, play PlayStation, and wait for the war to end. It's a weird kind of thing when you
Did
live.
Did you
in
have
place.
Friends that ever were fighting in the war?
No, the majority of the people in Lebanon will never fight in the war.
Yeah,
the majority of the people in Lebanon are like, oh,
like,
America and
just
Russia
like leave my town.
Yeah,
like,
America and Russia are having beef. Okay, they'll probably be done in a month. So just. Stay low.
It's so crazy.
And then America uses, you know, the American side is Saudi Arabia and the Russian side is Iran. And then that filters from Saudi down to the Emirates and from Iran down into Syria. And then Syria filters down into Hezbollah and then America, Saudi money. So the American strategy is, oh, you did that. We're going to pull funding. And the Russian strategy is, oh, you did that. Now we're going to have Hezbollah launch an attack on Israel, which is going to have Israel bomb your country.
Jesus.
So it's just like, so... Every now and then there's a war, and I have a lot of jokes about it in Lebanon. We make jokes during war. The partying doesn't stop.
So you're literally at your home playing PlayStation, and you're hearing bombs go off around
you. We'll go partying, and a bomb will go off in the distance, and people cheer. It becomes it becomes a part. But right now, the result of all of this war and all of this destruction over the past 20 years, combined with the comedy I've been doing, and other young people like myself in Lebanon across the Middle East starting to push unity. Together, the new generation is doing such a good job at learning from the mistakes of those who came before
That's
us.
That's good.
That Lebanon is now probably the most stable place in the Middle East compared to America. Lebanon's much safer right now.
Yeah,
like,
I believe it.
It's always been much safer except for war.
Yeah.
Which people laugh when I say that, but that's true. Like, there weren't any rapists, murderers, school shootings, none of that. There was just war, and you can hear war coming, so you can hide. But
I mean, really, but can you fully? I mean,
just go to the area where the war is less. You know, like if you
okay, but what if the war is like in your home? You just leave or near your home?
Yeah, you go to
your
You go to somebody else's house and wait for it to finish, and then just
so weird.
Because if it's Israel and Hezbollah, then that means it's going to be Israel versus the Shiite Muslim area. So just go to a Christian area to be safe. If it's ISIS trying to bomb into the country, then you know the Sunnis and the Shiites are involved, so you go to either the Sunni side or the Shiite side, depending on... That's what we used to do.
And how would you know?
Oh, you know, we know.
It just
we,
goes on the news? Or
no, we know. Like, right now, I can tell you that ISIS... I do jokes where I say America created ISIS, but it's not really a joke. It's ISIS equals Saudi Arabia, Sunni, American.
Yeah.
And then you have Hezbollah on the other side. So whoever's coming into the country, whatever the motive, you know what's going on. You don't go and walk into the area where... ISIS is going to have support.
Yeah.
But that's not true today because ISIS doesn't have support in Lebanon.
Okay.
They've tried. I mean, we have a border with Syria. We've taken in 3 million Syrian refugees in the past 3 years. We still have no crime.
Yeah.
Still no rape. Still no murder. No terrorist attacks. That's because we've learned so much from all the killing. So now.
Did you ever feel scared?
This is a strange thing. No.
Really?
Not never.
Is it just, but is it because you got used to it or is it
because
you just always kind of knew?
No, because you're, like, imagine right now you and your friends go out partying.
Yeah.
And for some, I don't know, you're going to a place you guys have never been to before.
Yeah.
And all your friends are freaking out. I'm making just a simple example. Yeah. Then you're going to be like, geez, what is this place going to be? You're going to be a bit anxious. But if you're going to a new place just to grab drinks and all your friends are like, oh my God, you're going to love this place. This is going to be fantastic. You're going to be pretty calm. And your expectations are going to be high.
Yeah.
The war is like that place. And everybody that was in it was like, oh, nothing's going to happen. It's fine. You're going to be fine. And you kind of like, I guess so. And then after the first war and the second war and the third war.
Is that just your parents telling that to make you feel better?
No, no. They're genuinely calm. Like, you can read it. They're like, calm. We're still making jokes.
Yeah.
You know, a bomb went off and the windows exploded close by. Your dad's like, everyone okay? Everyone all right? Okay. Oh, goddamn. Now we have to call that guy to fix the windows. He doesn't stop talking. That's the problem
now.
Oh, my
God.
Do you get what I'm saying?
But
so,
like, okay,
and after
but
you survive
a few
of them,
went off across the street,
mm-hmm.
and someone maybe, did anyone you know ever die? Or did it just...
Well, you see, when Syria, for instance, killed our prime minister, this is where it gets heavy.
Yeah.
When there's political people being eliminated, mm-hmm. they don't do it like, it's not like a sniper walks up and then yeah. walks up. It's like he has an armored barricade.
Oh,
so
you
we're
told
gonna,
me this. That this is a scary one.
We're going to blow up the entire street.
Yes.
And then you lose friends.
Yeah.
So in
and
these,
has that happened to you? You've lost friends?
Yeah, of course.
You always, were right. Weren't you right by?
I walked by that assassination maybe a minute before it happened.
Yeah. So what happened? They blew it up from the ground, right?
They put about 2 or 3 tons of C4 or something underneath the ground. And when he was driving there, they blew him. They blew everything to hell. Killed 50, 60 people. But that spurred
so scary.
A revolution in our country.
So you missed that by a minute.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It blew up behind me.
But you're not scared. You could have died.
You could have died, but I'm not scared because at the time I didn't know I could have died.
Yeah.
That
helps.
That's
true, yeah.
Right?
Then you just felt lucky, I guess.
That wasn't a war. That was a dangerous period. That was when stand-up started.
Yeah.
So in the first year of stand-up, it was 14 political assassinations, an international and a civil war. That was going on, car bombings, all of that stuff.
Explain when stand-up started. You basically started stand-up
yeah,
in the Middle East.
From scratch.
Now, is it that the government didn't want it, or people just didn't really do comedy or no comedy?
No, I mean, nobody really did it. I mean,
they
because it's
know.
A culture of... How many Italian stand-up comics do you know?
None.
And the reason is because the Italian culture is you become a doctor, you become a surgeon.
Oh,
you become,
yeah, you're right.
It's the same thing in Lebanon.
But there's a lot of,
Middle
like,
East.
Australian and English comics.
Yeah, but not...
But not, like, yeah, not a lot of
no,
European, not a lot of
no,
Italian or French
exactly.
or...
Exactly.
Yeah.
If you're an Arab, what you want to be a clown? Like, well,
yeah.
I don't get what you're trying to do. You have to be, like, a doctor or an engineer.
Is that what your dad said to you?
Yeah, exactly what he said. So when
so
I...
you want to be a clown, you're like, no, I want to
no,
tell
I want to
jokes.
Be a stand-up comic. He's like, oh, you want to stand up and be a clown? That's great.
Just was he worried or disappointed?
Very.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. And not easy to convince, and I love that. Mm-hmm. I don't think parents should be supportive of their kids. I don't think parents
yeah.
should ever be supportive of anything a kid does. Because if the difference between
I mean,
a
my
kid...
my parents weren't overly supportive about stand-up, but they didn't... They were fine, but they were kind of like, yeah, that's a great hobby. Good for you.
Yeah, yeah.
So are you going to go to like,
no,
law school
I think parents
while
should
you're
go.
That?
I think
yeah.
parents should be like, that's nice, but you do yeah. realize you're going to fail because you're not a good person.
Yeah.
You're terrible at what you do. You're not that funny. Because I think if the difference between
well, my
you,
parents are they're very complimentary, though. But they just were not encouraging of it. They were more like...
No, I think they should go the extra step.
Really?
Yeah, because if you can't overcome your parents, then you weren't destined to do what you were supposed to do.
I read a book about this, though. There was a guy who did my podcast named Rich Scheidner, and he wrote a book about the comedy boom in the 80s. He was an 80s mm-hmm. comic, came up with like Robin Williams and stuff. And he had a theory that people that become comics were raised one of two ways. One was they were, I forget what the word was that he used, they were a prisoner, where they were like told they were awful or they mm-hmm. had like they were abandoned by their parents, mm-hmm. or they were a prince. They were overly praised, so then you're just like, I can do anything. That's how I was. I was like, I'm just... I'm
yeah, but you're
fantastic.
Funny. You're good.
Thank you.
The nice thing about comedy is that you can be praised all you want, but then when you get to stage...
Oh, yeah. Well, it's like that. Have you ever heard that Jerry Seinfeld quote? It's comedy is the closest thing to justice. If you're good, you survive. If not, then...
Then you're done.
Yeah.
It's,
you actually...
It's the purest...
It's something you can't fake.
It's the... What I loved was an Arabic newspaper mm-hmm. wrote this after coming face-to-face with stand-up comedy for the
yeah.
first time. They said this is an art form that is the noblest and purest art form.
That's so
because
cool.
Because of its honesty.
Yeah.
And I remember calling the reporter and saying, why did you... I love the sentence. I just wanted to see what his reasoning for that was. He's like, because if you're not funny, people don't laugh. For
sure.
him...
It's so simple.
But for him being in the Middle East where people are like supporting a politician just because they're supposed to.
Mm-hmm.
And whatever he says, they're like clapping or whatever because they don't want to die.
Because they're afraid, yeah.
Yeah. Here they're like, there's this guy standing on stage by himself and people are laughing means you're good.
Yeah.
They're not laughing means you're not. And
and
it resonated to him because he had an A-B comparison.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Because, like, they'll clap for this person.
They'll clap for whatever because this dude is whoever. Because
they're afraid of him. But
and then they're like,
comedy,
look at this.
They have the option
to. They have the option not to laugh.
Yeah.
Even if you pay, especially because you paid.
Yeah.
Right?
Exactly.
Like, you put $50 for this ticket and you're not funny?
Mm-hmm.
Like, why am I here?
And they just sit back with their
arms
crossed.
They sit back with their
like,
arms crossed.
Yeah, make me laugh.
Exactly. So... They picked up on it.
Yeah.
And I love that they picked up on it.
That's crazy. By the way, I know that you can only hear it in one ear. It's because it's
that's
recording.
Why I put this to hear your voice.
Yeah.
Me.
It's because it's recording stereo.
Mono on both sides. Yeah,
yeah,
100%.
Yeah. And they fix it later.
Don't worry.
Yeah. It's confusing.
I know exactly what's going on.
So how did you start stand-up comedy in the Middle East? Like, did you just started like putting on shows? Did you know how to put on a show?
I wanted to be a comic since I was a child. Since
mm-hmm.
I grew up in San Diego.
Yeah.
So before we went back, I was 11 when I went
back. Oh,
yeah,
I forgot you grew up in San Diego.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Then when I was 11, we went back to Lebanon
in
93. At the time, the Civil War had ended.
Mm-hmm.
And now we have a beautiful period of peace in the country, and it's so stable. But I mean, Lebanon wasn't like that.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I'm saying? Like, yeah. In 93, when we went there, it was just so after the Civil War.
Why did you go back?
Because my dad was like, we need to go back to Beirut where it's safe. He felt that it was not a good place to raise kids here because of drugs.
Yeah.
Stuff like that. Yeah. So we went
back. San Diego's a pretty big city.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Bigger than Lebanon, by the way.
Yeah.
Lebanon's smaller than San Diego County. We go to Lebanon, but it wasn't just me who had returned.
Mm-hmm.
All of these people returned. So none of my friends spoke Arabic.
Really?
They were Canadian, American, British.
Yeah.
African, you know?
I hear it's incredible. My friend Gina, whom you know, I went to college with, her dad got remarried and remarried a Lebanese woman. And he is like, I think, did he move there? Or they just have been talking about it where he's like, it's the most wonderful, beautiful place.
It's
like,
breathtaking.
Peaceful. Yeah.
It's peaceful. It's.
And like is he Italian? I forget what he is. I know her mom's Italian.
Italians will love it. Yeah. Italians love Lebanon. It's very similar.
He's a guy from Oregon that was just like, you know what? Lebanon's the way to go.
Every American that's come to the country, from comics to singers to performers.
Yeah.
Because the biggest acts come to Lebanon. I mean, mm-hmm. Name it. Sting, Red Hot Chili Peppers. Like, name it.
Cool.
They've been there. Sia was just there a couple months ago.
Do they have military bases?
In Lebanon?
Yeah.
Yeah, we have a military for sure. You mean America?
No,
have
American
military?
One. Yeah.
No.
I was like, maybe I could go there and do a military tour, but never
mind. No, they don't. They don't. But there's an there's the American embassy. They bring comics.
Yeah.
No, I'll bring you to Lebanon. You'll do a proper show.
We'll
for
do a
the,
show. All right.
For
that'd
the
be
people
cool.
Who are more American than the Americans.
And they're English speaking. So like you do
this
comic.
Is my comedy is in English. I don't speak Arabic that well.
Really?
I mean, I speak it very well, but not well enough to do a show.
How did you assume that they all would know English when they came to your show?
That they would?
Yeah.
Well, everybody in Lebanon speaks English.
Oh, okay.
Everybody in the Middle East speaks English.
Yeah.
In Lebanon, everybody speaks English, Arabic, and
we're
French.
We're such scumbags. We just expect everyone to learn our language. Americans.
True.
It's
well, the
it's,
internet
it's
won.
It's incredibly arrogant.
But the internet won.
Yeah.
The tool is in English. That's why the language protects you.
That's true. But
plus,
still.
The language is very simple.
Yeah.
So if you know, it's not Chinese.
Yeah.
It's not
true.
Arabic.
But we're way too arrogant.
Of course we are.
Yeah. Like I hate myself that I haven't bothered to even like learn Spanish properly. I mean, I can handle a little bit of it. But
why would you be so motivated to learn Spanish when the Spanish people are learning English?
Because we're sharing a country with them.
I agree. I'm just saying from an American perspective, it's not necessary. But for the Spanish perspective, it's necessary to open up American markets.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, that's true.
The Middle East, unfortunately, it had nothing to do with that. It's because we all left because of war.
Yeah.
So when we came back, nobody spoke Arabic, so everybody had to speak English, or else you're not going to be able to get
okay, that
whatever.
Makes sense.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But in Lebanon, you have to learn English, Arabic, and French.
Mm-hmm.
In the Middle East, you have to learn Arabic and English. Everyone speaks it.
Yeah.
You can get by
Do
just
fine. You speak
fun.
French too?
Yeah.
Must be nice. You're so cultured.
It's
I feel like I
the
look
most
like
useless skill you could ever acquire is to learn French. That's what
really?
I've said. Yeah. I mean, so I speak French, so I can sound a bit fancy every now and then.
See, I feel like I look like someone that would speak several languages.
Yeah, you do.
But I don't.
Do.
But I'm a moron.
No, you're not. No. You're just languagely challenged.
I went to
linguistically challenged.
I'm from a small town, so we didn't even have. I think we had maybe two classes, maybe of Spanish that you could take in high school. There was not even an option. We didn't even have more than like we didn't even have a soccer team. Like so, like
oh wow,
it was like you had football, basketball, and baseball, and I think maybe track, but like we didn't even deviate into cooler sports. We didn't have a lot of like, yeah, language wasn't offered besides Spanish. And then in my college, I feel like we had to take Spanish, and I almost got straight A's in college.
Nice.
I remember 0% of it though.
Of course.
So I got 100% in Spanish, but don't remember any of it. I just blocked it out. I don't know.
Listen, it comes with use, right? Like if you're not using the language, you're gonna forget it.
Yeah, that's true. I don't know. So you wanted to be a comic since you were a kid. But
when
how
I got
did
to I went to the American University of Beirut, which is the Harvard of the Middle East. It's like a 120-year-old institution.
Okay.
Gorgeous campus. And it is the American like.
Do you have to pay for that? Is it like a private school?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Are all of the schools?
No,
there?
No. You can go to like state universities.
Yeah.
And this one's a private one.
Uh-huh.
Very tough to get into the whole thing.
Yeah. Oh, that was your college, not your like
not
high
my school.
School.
But my high school, you also pay.
Oh, okay.
There's also public schooling, but it's pretty trash.
Yeah.
Now it's better, but I mean at the time.
Yeah, I know. I went to a pretty trash high school. our system's not
there
great
you go.
Here.
Yeah.
So
when I got to college, I wanted to do stand-up so bad. Obviously, there are no clubs. There's nothing. So I started hosting the concerts.
Mm-hmm.
So I went in, I'm like, let me host we had these outdoor concerts that would go on for like 4 or 5 days, ton of bands. I'd be the host. And in between
would
bands.
Would you do stand-up?
I do stand-up in between the acts
while
they're setting
up. That's
how
people used to do that in the 80s. That was how, that guy I was just telling you about. He was saying he used to open for like famous rock bands and stuff. They used to put comics because there was such a comedy boom mm-hmm. in that time in America that they were just trying to find any place to put up comedy. Yeah, I mean,
and
they would close
comedy
down.
Is so low maintenance. It's a mic and a dude.
Yeah, it's so
and
easy.
A woman,
yeah.
Or a dude, you know, whatever it is.
So they used to, yeah, they used to do. They don't really do it now, but they used to do that in the '80s. Where
well,
comics
for me,
would
it was
open
like
for bands.
They'd get me and I'd host for 4 days straight. So uh-huh. I'd be jumping up between acts,
getting a lot of good time in.
Great time, mm-hmm. and it was boot camp.
Yeah,
because you go up, you bomb, you have to go back up.
Because these people aren't expecting to see comedy.
No.
Yeah.
And you have to go back up in like, what, 20, 30 minutes
yeah.
in front of the same crowd and now win them over. So it's like...
How much time would you do in between the bands?
Well, this is a college-organized festival. Yeah. Horrible. Sometimes it'd be like...
Oh, because you're doing while they're setting up.
While they're
stuff,
setting up
right?
and
yeah.
something goes wrong and then somebody trips and then you have to improvise and somebody makes a noise. And yeah. So it was great.
Yeah,
but fortunately, I turned out to be pretty good at it.
Yeah.
To the extent that by the third... time I was doing the third year
mm-hmm.
people were showing up to see me and not the bands, like it got that big.
Really?
Yeah. And like bands would be on stage that would suck and they'd start calling me to come back on.
Do you remember any of your first jokes? Well, you're not that old. This isn't that long ago.
This is in 2001.
Well, how old are you?
I'm 33, so I was
yeah,
a freshman.
Yeah, but it's well,
I remember one of my jokes.
So you've been doing comedy a long time.
I have, but that was like I do that and then for 6 months there'd be nothing.
Yeah. Because it's not like, yeah, there's not like clubs
no
you
clubs.
Can go get booked at, yeah.
And I just kept doing that. I had this weird following of people who were like, they knew me because of the concerts. We're talking like 7,000, 8,000 people.
And this
people
is before
crowds.
Social media was super big. Like that's before
yeah,
Twitter.
Yeah.
And so
yeah, yeah, yeah.
How were they following you? Was it MySpace? Was it MySpace
when I went professional in 2005, 2006, that was MySpace.
Okay.
I started using social networking from day one.
Is that how people knew to come to your shows?
Yeah, when I did my first show, I'd go onto their MySpace pages and post my pictures in the comments section.
Great.
Yeah. And then get the word out. And then started building it slowly. And I was great at PR.
I was going to say, part of your success, or a lot of your success, obviously, is that you're hilarious and you're a very good comic. But a lot of it, too, is that you know how to promote yourself. And you're a good business person.
95% of it is
yeah.
the promotion, not the comedy.
Yeah.
I think
I'm not great at self-promotion.
I think the world today, unfortunately, uh-huh. For comedy, requires that you're a better... There's a lot of unfunny comics, if we're going to speak honestly right now,
well,
that are doing
course.
Very well.
Mm-hmm.
That's because they're good at business.
Mm-hmm. I'm a good business person, but I'm not
good at selling yourself?
Yeah. I feel like I get uncomfortable by it. Like, I'm like, oh, people are going to know. They're going to just
think
I'm annoying.
I think the difference between somebody being good at selling themselves and not being good at selling themselves mm-hmm. is one realization that believing people can make money off of you.
Mm-hmm.
Once you realize people can make money off of you,
yeah.
you're no longer selling yourself. You're now giving them the opportunity of a lifetime.
Yeah, that's true.
You know,
I feel that with my podcast where I'm like you can, you know, I'm starting to get sponsors and stuff where I'm like, well, I mean, I'm providing them a service. This is a value to them.
And your comedy, you're filling up a venue.
Yeah.
You're selling tickets.
And drinks.
And drinks and
yeah.
food and notoriety. Because mm-hmm. when somebody sees you perform in X venue,
yeah.
they're going to say the acts that come here are so good. It's going to help their brand.
Yeah.
And then you're going to help TV shows you get on and you're going to help. More and more things that you become a part of and movies. And
yeah.
once you start to realize that you're no longer selling yourself, you're like, do you want in on this or not?
Yeah,
is
that's
where
true.
It becomes. So
I
for me, when
I do
started,
have that kind of confidence. I do feel like that now, but I for some reason, I'm just not good about like actively putting it on social media. And like when I have shows and
yeah.
you know, I forget.
Well, it kind of helps when in the Middle East, I was booking venues and having to buy the venue for the night.
So you would have to front it and then you would need to sell the tickets to fill it.
If I don't fill it, I still have to pay the bill.
How much would you have to pay for?
Well, when I did my first special, it was in a theater at the Casino du Liban,
mm-hmm.
which is like the Lebanese casino, and it's like this very prestigious.
I love casinos.
1,100 seating venue, beautiful venue.
And how many years into comedy were you when you did your first?
Professionally, a year.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah, I mean, but here's the thing.
Did you self-fund your first special?
Of course.
Yeah.
But there was no way that the radio station I worked with helped out. There's more on that, but I mean. I never got the chance to do a 5 or 10 minute set
mm-hmm.
until 2-3 years ago.
Until you
before,
came here.
Yeah, before
and
that.
3,000 comics, so you don't get as much time.
Before that, every show, I had to do a full show.
Yeah.
Do you get what I'm saying?
Yeah,
there were no,
so you have so
there weren't
material,
other
yeah.
comics.
Oh, yeah.
Well, but there was a lot of material, but there was also a lot of terror for
yeah.
the comic because if you suck.
Did you bring an opener? Or were you, was there
what
not even
there aren't
there was
any
no,
openers.
No one, you were literally the only comic.
I went to open for myself, get the crowd warmed up, all of that, and in an industry that wasn't established, so people didn't know what they were coming for.
Yeah.
It was heart nerve-wracking. It was the most psychologically traumatizing thing of my life.
Mm-hmm.
And then after doing that for a few years, it made me so comfortable doing anything.
Yeah.
It's like going to war.
Yeah.
Because you have the worst circumstances every night. A show for 4,000 people, but no spotlight. A show for 1,000 people, but the microphone's fucked. A show for whatever. All of these circumstances, and you have to deal with them.
Yeah.
Now I come over here to the U.S., and the reason that I'm doing so well so quickly is because I get into, for me, it's like, oh, I just have to deal with competition. Like, it's so non-issue for me.
Yeah.
That I don't, nothing, I'm not nervous. I don't, because it's like, I'm like, do you guys know you can go to a venue here and everything's just set up? Like, for me, it's like.
You were having to set it all up. A whole new world.
Unbelievable.
That's crazy.
Are
there comics competitive with you here? I feel like you're such a nice guy. Like, you're not someone that I feel guys would want to see you fail.
I don't understand. I have met competitive comics, and I'm like, why are you. Would you want to compete with me? Because I'm the kind of comic that I want to book everyone on my show.
I'm the same way. I'm happy when everyone makes it.
Yeah, I'm so happy.
Do you know who Andy Kozel is?
Of course.
So we were talking about this when he did my podcast, because I always thought like I was an A-type person.
Okay.
In the sense of like, I'm like a real go-getter. I'm committed, you know. He's like, that means that, he's like, but you have the personality of a B-type person where you're not willing to step on everyone to make it. You want everyone to make it.
Definitely.
Like, you're happy. Like, I'm happy when other people make it. That means there's more room for success for everyone.
What, 7 billion people on the earth? Can we relax for a second? Like,
But most comics, he said, because he's like, he's B-type in that way too. He's like, most comics are all A-type. They're like, so, comics are very competitive.
Because they're not good comics.
You think that's why?
That's my bottom. First of all, 99% of the comics are trash in America. Like, it's ridiculous. Yeah. I mean, seriously, for every Chris Rock and Louis C.K. and every there's, I mean, Jesus Christ, the amount of shows that I see where it's depressing.
Mm-hmm.
It's just absolutely offensively depressing to watch.
Chris Rock's incredible. Incredible. Yeah. But I just saw him, he's been trying to work out his new, for his new special. And like, even someone like him, who's a genius, still struggles. When he's trying to write new material. Like,
I'm not surprised.
Worked. You know, it was like, he kind of would go off on tangents, but then he would just say something that was like, mind-blowingly brilliant
because it's Chris Rock.
Yeah,
but sometimes I wish I could see these comics that I see in the clubs and stuff, like, try a bit harder. And for them, they're forgetting that it's not getting above people that makes you great.
Mm-hmm.
It's being great that makes you great.
Yeah.
So here they're competing with each other because they think the only difference between them winning and not is being noticed.
Mm-hmm.
The real reality is being noticed sets your duration.
Mm-hmm.
Either you're going to get noticed now, or if your material is good, you're going to get noticed now or in a bit.
Yeah.
But if your material isn't good, just the fact that you got noticed, you'll be famous for 15 minutes and that's it. You got one
good
bit.
Sounds like a Barry Katz line. He always says stuff like that where he's like,
that's why me and him get along so well.
He keeps being undeniable.
Undeniable. Yeah, I was just going to say, he's like, be undeniable.
Yeah.
But it's true.
But yeah.
It's true. I'm doing shows and going into places. Like, I did a show in Nashville.
Mm-hmm. How big was the venue?
Small. It was Zany's. It was like a 300-seater.
Okay.
And it wasn't
that small, but yeah.
I mean, it's not like a theater or arena or something. But it's Nashville. I've never been to Nashville. I didn't know there were any Lebanese in Nashville. Mm-hmm. All of the Lebanese people came and the Arab people, all of them came. There were like 40 of them.
They were probably so excited to see you.
They were, but there were like 40 of them.
Okay.
The rest of the show, because I did a great job promoting and publicity.
Did you sell it out?
Almost. It was packed. It was a Tuesday, too.
So how did you promote it? What did you do?
Went on radio shows, the TV, do a lot of online marketing. I have great online marketing. I invest money.
Do you pay other people to do it, or do you do it yourself?
I do it myself, and I hire promoters. I say, how much money can I make from this show? Let's say, for the sake of the argument, I'm not saying that's how much you could make. Let's say, I don't know, $5,000, $10,000 to make it mathematically easy. That means I'm going to be spending $10,000 on marketing this show. For me, the first...
So you don't profit on it?
I don't. I either make zero money or lose money on a tour when I'm starting out. That's what I do in America now.
I guess I'm almost somewhat like that, too, because... Well,
you're building the brand.
Frankly,
you're investing
in
your brand.
What it costs to have a publicist, pretty much like that is that costs more than what I made on the gig.
There you go. So if you're going to get a publicist, which you should have,
and
you're going to get, for me, it's kind of like you invest money in your brand. If you believe in yourself, eventually it's going to pay you back in dividends.
Oh yeah.
So for
comics
me,
can make a lot of money.
Oh my god,
once you get to a certain
so
point.
Much. Yeah. Even if you're doing weekly gigs for $3,000 a week,
yeah, it's great.
That's still great money. Yeah. So for me, if I'm going to spend my money in my brand, I'm not losing money.
Yeah.
I'm marketing.
Yeah.
And I'm gaining. I got maybe 150 Americans who've never heard of me came to the show.
Now you have a new followers.
Love the show. They're going to tell their friends. I got new followers. This, when my Netflix special or HBO special or whatever, if anyone takes my special, or if nobody takes it and it goes on YouTube, when they see it, they're going to know, hey, that's the guy That's mm-hmm. how you grow. Mm-hmm. So that's what I would do in places like Nashville. But for me to go to a place like Nashville and be able to make an impact, that's what matters to me.
Yeah.
And I have to find out. And that's the only way to find out.
That's cool. Did you self-fund your latest special too? And now you're pitching it? I was thinking about that. I was like, I don't know what.
Cost would... me a fortune, but.
Really? Like a lot?
Yeah. I mean, but here's
but you,
the.
You were doing but a it lot, the Nokia Theater, is
but
that where it was?
Yeah, but a lot less than what I hear comics get charged by the production companies.
Yeah, that's true. Oh, so they get charged
they
by
get
the...
ripped off. I mean, let's be very honest. I mean, if a production company comes and says, or like...
But they're fronting the money, but then they take it out of whatever
the
sales
are. But
the
amount of money is ridiculous. First of all, it's a comedy special. You're standing on the same stage, in the same lighting, in the same clothes, with six or seven cameras fixed on you, just mm-hmm. switching between them. You don't really need a director to take $50,000 for the special.
Yeah, no. Did you have a director help you?
No, I directed it myself. Yeah. We set the. I was like, I want a camera here, a camera there. We showed up early.
So did you know which one to look at different times and stuff? Or were they just shooting?
I had enough cameras that were shooting me from all angles that I could just enjoy myself on stage. I had, and I
it
always
do. It was a
great
show.
Thank you. I'm glad you thought that. I have great shots of you.
Yes.
And you're going to definitely be in this special, making it look like I focus on you because I'm like, look at the women that come to my show.
Look how great
look
I am.
Look how beautiful these women are. That means I'm amazing.
That means I'm amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You should laugh because women like me.
Do you see this woman laughing? Shame on you for not laughing. That's why you don't have a woman like this. Very, very easy.
Ooh, very manipulative. I like
hey, it works. But that show, you know, to film it costs a lot of money, but definitely a lot less if you're the one hiring the camera people, mm-hmm. talking to the production companies, paying for the insurance. Because first of all, you're not paying an agency markup.
Yeah.
You're not, you know, you're cutting out a lot of people that aren't necessary.
Uh-huh.
And if you know what you're doing, really, some guy comes up, it's like, I need two assistants. And you're like, for what?
Yeah.
You're standing.
Yeah. You're just
on a tripod.
Yeah.
I'm not asking you to carry a camera.
Yeah.
Why do you need an assistant? And the dude who's carrying the mobile camera through the crowd is on his own. Maybe I should put him on the tripod. Like, do you get what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So you have to be like that.
Yeah.
You have to know everything about your brand.
Mm-hmm.
Everything from the graphic design, all the details, to make sure that you have control. Because I think the worst thing an artist could ever deal with is like, had I done this or had mm-hmm. this person not screwed, don't let anyone decide your fate.
Mm-hmm.
So I've spent from 2001 till now.
I totally agree with you.
And learning everything I need.
The most successful comics do kind of take it into their own hands.
Look at Kevin Hart.
Yeah.
Kevin Hart is a guy I always point to because, and I don't like to say whether I think someone is funny. I personally enjoy watching him, but it's not a, it has nothing to, I'm not talking about his comedy. Mm-hmm. His comedy is great. I'm talking about his business acumen
mm-hmm.
is brilliant.
Yeah,
this is a guy who's up at 3-4 in the morning every day.
Mm-hmm.
He's surrounded himself
that's
by...
That's like a little early, but...
yeah, but that's somebody who's surrounded by himself by stable people.
Yeah.
His wife is a stable human being. Mm-hmm. He's not going for rock star bullshit. He works hard.
Mm-hmm.
His like ethic is amazing. But at the same time, he owns his brand. Mm-hmm. If somebody doesn't like Kevin Hart today, mm-hmm. some big network executive, and they come and they say, screw you, we want you to do this. And he says, I don't want to do this. They say, do it or we're going to cut you off. He goes, cut me off. I'll make a movie, post it on my Instagram, and sell millions of dollars worth of tickets.
Yeah.
He owns his brand because he's got a production company mm-hmm. with him the whole time, Heart Productions, whatever it is, Heartbeat Productions. And he's doing his own thing, and he's out there because he knows he probably has 5 to 10 years where people love him
mm-hmm.
in terms of the industry, and then they might turn on him, but he can ride through it now.
See, that's what's so great about being a comic. When I first moved out here and I was just trying to be an actor, I hated the feeling of I had to wait for someone to say yes to me or to hire me.
Isn't it the worst?
Yeah. And I mean, I went to writing school, then I started doing stand-up, and I was like, this is the one thing I can do where it's in my hands. If I want to get up and do comedy, I can get up and do comedy mm-hmm. any night of the week. Mm-hmm. It might be at an open mic. It
but
might not be a
show,
but I can still get up and do what I love to
do. That's
power. Yeah, it's amazing.
And to be able to be the master of your craft, you need to have that power.
Mm-hmm.
It's that simple.
Yeah.
So that when you screw up, you screwed up.
Yeah.
And it's when you win,
mm-hmm.
you won.
Absolutely.
You know what I'm saying? Or you and the team won.
Yeah.
But even if you have a team, the screw up has to fall on you.
Mm-hmm.
You can't, because if I have somebody doing the audio for my show, which obviously you do, but I'm an audio engineer.
Mm-hmm.
I know what mics they're using. I know how they're setting them up.
Yeah.
I know everything. If it turns out screwed up, that's on me.
Yeah.
I'm not going to rely on them mm-hmm. for something so crucial. This is my livelihood right there.
What do you mean? Are you the one doing the audio engineering?
No, I have an audio engineer, but I will tell him where I want the mics
or her.
Yeah. And we will work together.
You have to learn every side of the business. Yeah.
You have to know every side of the business. You don't have to know that you need to do audio. You have to know that you need to do audio in a room that's closed, that's this big. You're going to need these kind of mics.
Mm-hmm.
You need to learn this.
Mm-hmm.
Even if that means rolling up your sleeves and getting dirty, even if it means screwing up,
mm-hmm.
that's how you learn.
Mm-hmm.
But then come the future, I can produce a special that looks so spectacular And in fact, the sound in it is better than any other special any comic has done because I've tried so many approaches.
Yeah.
And I know what I'm trying to do. And I know where I'm going. And I know what I want it to sound like. And I know how I can get it to sound like that. Mm-hmm. Those are two very important things.
I wanted to ask you, too, when you started doing stand-up in, were you in Beirut? Where were you?
I started in Lebanon, then went across the Middle East.
Okay. And did you come in conflict with people that didn't want you doing it, like government or because you said you've had negotiations with warlords before. What does that mean?
Well, the warlord also has the biggest venues because a lot of people launder money.
Okay.
So a warlord might be somebody who during the war was like a huge drug dealer.
Okay.
Has a shit ton of money, big connections, tries to launder money. They open up venues. Venues are cash.
Oh,
places.
Yeah.
So you want to do
sense.
A show at a venue and you're sitting down with this guy who's probably killed quite a few people or had them killed. And he looks not like a very nice...
You're lucky you're a big dude.
...human being. I'm 6'5", it helps.
Yeah.
I've had people threaten me, send people to threaten my family.
And oh, my God.
Yeah, so it was like, this was not necessarily in Beirut. Beirut, once again, is a more stable place.
Mm-hmm.
But even in Beirut, I've had encounters, especially when it was a volatile area in the Middle East, to be where people don't like the fact that you're not coming from somewhere. I'm an independent.
What does that mean?
I rose through social media.
Okay.
So nobody controls me.
Okay.
I'm like Kevin Hart in the Middle East.
Yeah, yeah.
So I've had, when I went up against the media industry, because it's controlled by politicians and it's controlled, and I'm trying to unite people, and I go up and I say, the media industry is rigged, and kind of like a Donald Trump tirade, but it really is there.
Yeah, yeah.
The ratings agency is owned by the same people who own the TV stations.
Now,
Hello.
Did you do this at your show, or did you go on TV and say this? What are you?
I went and I did this. For that example, I had a tussle with a media industry leader who was filming an awards ceremony. And I went up during the awards ceremony and destroyed them for on a like 20, 30 minute rant. And nobody even like everyone was just like, let it go. But it wasn't live. I knew they would cut it later.
Uh-huh.
So I had my girlfriend at the time film it with my phone.
Yeah.
And then at 6 in
were
the morning.
Were you like presenting at this award? Or did you steal
I was
the
winning
mic like
the
Kanye?
Award. No, it was my award.
Oh, okay.
And I went up to get it, but I destroyed them in it. And then I posted it online.
Mm-hmm.
And it got much more viewership online than the ceremony got on TV in the future.
That's funny.
And it ignited a huge confrontation between myself and the entire media industry, which I won.
Yeah.
Very simply because they were like, we're going to take everything away from this kid, but I can fill up a room.
Yeah.
So when you can fill up a room, it's like, okay, you can take away my sponsors, you can take away everything from me.
Yeah.
But I have zero debt, and I can announce a show. I'm a good comic, and.
Yeah.
I can guarantee that 1,000 people will show up on a Tuesday in a week.
Yeah.
So I have enough money to get by.
Didn't you have a situation where you got threatened when you were doing a show, though? I thought there was something where, like, they told you to shut it down, you did it anyways.
Yeah. I've done that.
What if you got shot? What if you were on stage and, like, they just decided to,
take you
out?
This is what's the nice thing about the Middle East. People don't shoot people because of the retaliation.
What do you mean?
If I go out right now and I shoot someone in the Middle East,
yeah.
First of all, it's not a very lawless place. You can't just do that. But let's say I'm some kind of warlord and I'm used to my old ways.
Yeah.
Chances are, whoever you just shot, their family is going to come back and destroy you and your village.
Yeah.
Like the retribution, it can start conflicts that are almost wars.
Yeah.
So based on what happened in the wars in the region,
people
don't do that anymore. There's just a lot of bravado.
So
where
people
come and try
to threatening you?
Well, when you go up and you tell people stop following religion, stop following politics, stop following that kind of thing.
A little controversial, I guess.
It gets a bit controversial. Yeah. But then you so for once there was a time where I was at an event and somebody told me that if you keep doing what you're doing, we know where your family lives, we know where your whatever lives.
Mm-hmm.
And I got in a fight with these two gentlemen
at
the time, and I had to learn a lot of, you know, like self-defense, kind of like martial arts and stuff. For instances like this.
Yeah.
Because it's surprisingly easy to drop a human being.
Again, you're gigantic.
Especially when you're 6'5". But even you, Rachel, if you just flick a guy on the throat, it's good enough. Punch a dude in the throat.
Oh, I think I'm scrappy.
Oh, you could take out.
I feel like if someone attacked me,
it's not an achievement. I know a lot of people are like, yo, I could knock out somebody in 5 seconds. Yeah. It's not an achievement.
I feel like I'm someone that wouldn't give up. I would just, I think I would fight dirty.
It's an achievement when you're fighting someone who's like trained.
Yeah.
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 Like if you're like, I took on a black belt in one. Yeah.
Yeah.
But if you're talking about two thugs who are just like fat and big, like, I dropped them, like, big deal. I just punched them in the throat. But then what I did
is the throat the right way, place to
best
punch
way
him?
to hit a guy. Balls, he can still keep coming.
I'm a little afraid now that I'm single and like living alone that like someone's gonna like sneak in my
if
apartment.
If you punch someone in the throat, they're not getting up. If you slap them in the throat, they're probably not getting up either. I'm telling you, it's so effective.
Right. right in the throat.
And then I kind of dragged them out and then went outside and asked for, like, the dude who was there with them was mm-hmm. there. And I said, let's drive over to whoever sent you.
Yeah.
And I jumped in the car with them and we went over. Because I know that they're not going to do it. I have a huge following. Like, it doesn't make sense. And plus, when you do something...
You elected to go and meet up with the person
well,
that
I
sent
can't...
Them
somebody
to...
just threatened my family, so I want to know who it is.
Was your family so mad at you? Well, it's not your fault, but...
Well, of course. But, I mean, at the same time, what am I going to do? Just take it?
Yeah.
So, I figured... I went to the guy and I said, listen, I'm not going to risk my family for this. Yeah. You want me to stop that bad? I'll stop. It's that simple.
Yeah.
Like, my family's where I draw the line. But tell me what the hell you got against me, because I'm not doing anything that controversial except telling people... Be one. Like, it doesn't matter if you're Muslim, Christian, or Jewish.
Yeah.
Love each other for who you are. Like, I don't get why you're so angry. And he was like, well, you know, this is dangerous because what you're doing is you're dividing people. And it was so weird for them. The concept of unity, they thought I had some alternative motive. Like, I'm from the CIA or I'm some kind of, I'm like, no, I want, and I just, we sat and had coffee.
Whoa.
And sat and spent like 4 or 5 hours talking about my ideology, which is let's all get along because we're stronger as one.
Did he end up agreeing with you?
He comes to all my shows, brings his family.
Oh, my God.
Great guy.
Yeah.
He's a great guy.
Yeah, minus the people he's killed. Great guy, though.
Great dude.
Yeah.
That's the thing about growing up in the Middle East. You learn something that Americans have yet to learn.
Mm-hmm.
That if somebody doesn't agree with you, and maybe they're racist,
mm-hmm.
doesn't mean they're a bad person.
Yeah.
And I think realizing this, it's I know what I'm saying sounds terrible.
No, I know what you're saying. I agree
we
with
have
you.
Racist it's, people in our family. I mean, if somebody kills, they're a bad person.
It's, sometimes it's the way someone was raised, and they literally just don't know any better. Which it and it, they, I mean,
there are
I guess
people
it's
who are
their
racist
fault for
and
not
don't
like
know
going
it.
Going out of their way to like be better people, but like it's for some people they're not smart enough to realize that. And there's also people where they're just so afraid of what their family will think that they just keep thinking the same things their family thinks, and they can't help it.
Look, if you've been told since you were a kid,
mm-hmm.
if nobody told you that Santa Claus didn't exist,
yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there's a good percentage. A lot more people would
yeah,
be like,
it.
Dude,
yeah.
you totally fucking, where did the gifts come from? Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So it's just like, I've met people, I just hate the fact that a lot of people look at someone and then label them as something and dismiss them.
Yeah.
Just because you're racist.
Yeah.
Maybe you are, maybe you aren't. I'm saying just because somebody is racist, just because somebody is a jerk, just because, doesn't mean that they too want a family, want to feed them. When you start thinking about it like that, you see people as different people.
Yeah, where everyone's just trying to survive.
You might see that person
day.
As an enemy. I see them as a challenge.
Yeah.
I see them as, okay, this person's got it all wrong. I need to get this person, or we need to shut him down.
Yeah.
Or her down, because what they're doing is endangering lives.
Yeah. I mean,
But when somebody comes up and says something, like, I went to a show in Buffalo, New York, and my Uber driver was a black man who believes, beyond a shadow of a doubt, that Barack Obama turned his back on the Christians of the Middle East, and that he's Muslim, and that he's harboring Osama bin Laden with his harem of women in Hawaii.
Jesus.
In
he's
Hawaii.
Yeah, okay.
This is a black man.
Yeah.
Right? This is, beyond a shadow of a doubt, the dumbest, most retarded thing I've ever heard in my life.
Yeah.
But he was a really nice dude.
Yeah.
I invited him to my show. He came out. He loved
like
it. He's insane.
Yeah.
But he's still a nice person.
Yeah.
Just horribly, horribly misinformed. Because when a lack of education meets with a density of information that is very incorrect but looks very credible, it can fool the best of people.
Oh, yeah.
So when you look at that person, if I was the person who was like, oh, that's bullshit. You're an idiot.
Yeah.
We're not going to make any ground.
Yeah.
But I invited him to my show instead. And by the end of the show, he was like...
Well, I certainly wouldn't argue with a random like cab driver.
Oh, I wouldn't argue with him. But I'm just saying, when it comes to
like,
me... I was able to flip that dude.
Yeah.
And I think a big
did
problem...
Did you change his opinion, you think?
I definitely changed his opinion on a lot of weird things that he said about the Middle East that were so misinformed. It was funny, like the extent where he thinks Pakistan is the capital of like Beirut. Like, just like... he learned a few things. When you have that approach with people that even if they look horrible...
Mm-hmm.
But they can still be reached out to. You're going to make a lot more progress.
Yeah.
That's why when you come and you say, if somebody says, let's say, give an example in American politics, they support Trump and you think they're wrong for it, telling them you're racist or telling them you're an idiot isn't going to get you anywhere.
Yeah.
And you might not change their mind, but that's not a way to go about it.
Well,
and
it's
if
not
you
a
support
very good tactic in
general,
negotiating.
And if you're a Hillary supporter,
understand someone, and then
if you're a Hillary supporter and you want Trump to win, you shouldn't tell him you're just a social justice warrior, faggot, cunt, whatever word you want to use. No, what you should do is just say they disagree and I have information you may want to know.
Yeah.
And just be like, and then let's go eat because we all need to eat and then like fall in love and shit.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I know what you're saying. Totally. I just can't, like, when people get so radical or fanatical or whatever, I don't care about anything enough to get that crazy about it. Like,
America has been amazing at many things.
Yeah.
But extremism is not something it does well.
Yeah.
Extremism in America is very dangerous.
Extremely.
Extremely
because we have
dangerous.
All those crazy school shootings and church shootings. Like,
because you have extremism mixed with law.
And I think arrogance.
Like you have, no, no, but I mean, you have, so I can come out and be extreme. I can be a Westboro Baptist church, I can go to a military burial.
Mm-hmm.
And while they're burying the child of a family who died in the military, I can hold up signs and say, God hates fags. That's why your son died.
Yeah.
Blah, blah, blah. And you can't stop me.
Yeah. Oh, so I see what you're saying. Like, we're allowed to do so
the
much.
The danger in America is that extremism can get out of control quickly because mm-hmm. it's so protected.
Yeah.
Whereas in the Middle East, if you show up if I showed up to a dude's funeral and said, God hates fags, that's why your son is in the ground,
uh-huh.
I would be killed. And the police would be like, well, he was an idiot.
He deserved it.
And we'd all move on.
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm saying? Like, it's a very rational. So you'll never have that situation.
Well, I think that people, maybe we just don't live in fear as much of like.
It's weird. A guy slapped a priest in Lebanon. I remember years and years ago. A Christian guy.
He just walked up and slapped him?
Slapped a priest and tried to like attack him because the priest used to preach like I did, coming together.
Yeah.
And this Christian dude hated Muslims, like hated for whatever reason.
Yeah.
Hey, maybe they killed people in his family during the war. God knows what. Just like, and I cannot explain to you the reaction from the whole country.
What happened?
Protests in the streets.
Oh my God.
Politicians from every which direction, all religions on TV, going to the hospital. It brought the country together like crazy because everybody in the country feared the outcome of one slap could end up dividing people and we get another war. That's how sensitive we've become to division. Then you come over here to the U.S., people are going ballistic.
Yeah.
And campaigns are being run that we need to win at any cost. You can't win at any cost.
Mm-hmm.
The cost is too high.
Yeah.
But this is a country of debt, so who knows? Maybe you're not used to it yet. But the danger is there. Like, I'm from the Middle East and America. But speaking as an Arab right now, I can tell you what's happening in the U.S. is disturbing because we used to point to America in the Middle East and say, that's how a country is supposed to be run. You can have a difference in opinion and it's cool. But right now, it's just like, what's going on now?
Where do you feel more safe?
Definitely the Middle East.
Really?
Oh my God. I'd feel more safe almost. Look, I'm on the border with Syria and Lebanon. I pick Lebanon over America any day of the week because when a conflict breaks out in Lebanon, everybody gets involved and stops it. When a conflict breaks out in America, everybody flips out their cameras and films it.
Yeah.
There's a huge difference in that cultural thing to push it up.
What do you think about what's going on in Syria?
Well, Syria was Beirut in the 70s till the 90s.
Yeah.
So we saw it coming.
Yeah.
America and Russia butted heads.
Mm-hmm.
It started in Lebanon. They couldn't divide the country. It didn't work as a battlefield, and it spilled over into Syria.
Mm-hmm.
It's a shame, but Syria hasn't gone through what Lebanon went through.
Yeah.
Iraq hasn't gone through what Lebanon went through. Now that they have, in 15, 20 years, good luck starting anything in Syria or Iraq. It's not going to happen.
What? Starting another conflict?
There's never going to be war. It's funny, but after things like this happen, that's why Lebanon's so stable.
Okay, because it was terrible before.
Because we know what happened. Because we killed everyone.
And you want to avoid
it. Everyone killed everyone, and then we're like, oh, you're still here?
Yeah.
Shit. Like, okay.
But you guys weren't involved. I don't understand.
The way war works is they will divide you up. So let's say you're, just to give you a small example, Palestinian, angry at Israel, come into Lebanon. You're a Palestinian. You find support with the Shiite Muslims. The Shiite Muslims harbor you. You start to grow in refugee camps. The Christians in the country start to fear that there's an overflux of Muslims, thus upsetting the balance.
Okay.
Where are these people going to go if they're denied entry back into Israel? You try to push them out. A small skirmish happens. One thing leads to another. One day, a bunch of Palestinians jump on a bus and massacre a bunch of kids. Ignites a civil war across the country.
Yeah.
Now the country has to choose sides. The Sunni Muslims don't like the Shiite Muslims to begin with. They're wealthier and more educated, start propagating towards the Christians. The Christians start using the Sunni Muslims for their own gain because they just see the Sunni Muslims as inferior people, secondarily inferior to, of course, the most inferior, which for them is the Shiite Muslims. And then you start to see these weird divisions. Then the army splits up. The Christians in the army go with one general. Mm. The Sunnis in the army go with another general. The Jews in the army go with another general. The Shiites go with another general. Now you've got a war going on. Why did this happen? Because in the very beginning, America disagreed with what Iraq might have said and decided to pull some power away. An unready country for big power meddling can fall
an
into
unready country not ready for
can fall into chaos very quickly. Wow. So if you're in this is America, it's a very ready country. But I mean, how did Russia break up Crimea? How does Russia go into places and split them up? You pit the people against each other. Lebanon, you can't do that anymore. It doesn't work.
Why?
Because the youth is intermarrying. The youth is living with each other. We learned lessons. The army right now, there is no regiment. They look at the religion and mix it up. So every regiment is mixed of all religions.
That's interesting.
The government is split up. The prime minister has to be a Sunni Muslim. The president has to be a Maronite Christian. The speaker of the house has to be a Shiite Muslim. They split it up that way equally so that nobody can break off and cause significant damage anymore.
Interesting. I feel dumb asking this question. What type of government do you guys have?
Democracy. It's parliamentary.
Okay.
We elect the parliament. Parliament elects the president.
Okay.
Still, though, a lot of international meddling happens.
Yeah.
But it's much better than it was before.
Fascinating. Do you think you'll go back there?
I'm going in a week.
I know. I meant to live.
Of course.
Like, that's where you'll
The American ambassador to Lebanon, when he retired, bought a house, lives in Lebanon now.
Really?
Everybody who goes there... They don't want to come back to America, not because America is a bad place.
Yeah.
Because America isn't a free place. This is very funny to say, but you go to Lebanon, you barely pay any taxes. You own something, it's yours. The government doesn't come after you for it.
How does their country run? Where's the money?
Strangely.
Yeah.
It's not that big of a dilemma.
Yeah.
4 million people live in the country, 18 million live outside. The money pours in from outside.
How?
Families.
What do you mean? They just like donate money?
No, if the parents, their kids go and live abroad, they send money back to the parents.
Oh, I see.
Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah.
They come back, they buy a property. There's always money coming in. And then the country inside, the economy is pretty strong. You know, it's a tourism-based industry. We get tons of it's a beautiful country. So people come ski, swim, that stuff. So there's money coming in.
Does your family still work, your parents?
Yeah, my dad does. He was a civil mechanical engineer who went into business, started insurance brokerage late on, close to retirement, because he was like, I just need something to do.
Yeah.
Ended up making more money in it than he did as a civil mechanical engineer. He keeps that maintained.
Did they come see you a lot?
My mom's here now. First time she's been back to the U.S. in 21 years.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. My dad hasn't come back yet.
That's crazy. Why did she decide to come back now?
I invited her.
Yeah. Well, I don't know.
I was like, Mom, come spend a month with
me. Well, you've only been here 2 years, right?
Yeah. Okay. I was like, come spend a month with me. I got a place. Come, like, hang out. It'll be fun. Like, I miss my mom.
Yeah.
Straight up. That was the bottom line. And I figured if my sister's here, if I bring my mom here, then it'll be easier for me to bring my dad in the future because my dad's that stubborn.
So your sister lives here full time? What does she do?
Fashion photographer.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Very cool.
And she's doing pretty well, honestly.
Really? How does she get her clients?
Well, she started just like all of us, hustling. You take on models that haven't started, aren't famous.
Yeah.
Right? Just got signed or not even signed, just good looking people.
For free or whatever.
Yeah, you do a free photo shoot, you get to post them and hope that your work starts to A, get noticed, and B, when it's good enough and you have a good enough portfolio and a website, it's a better industry than comedy. Once you have
there's a lot of successful photographers.
It's a structured industry.
Yeah.
You know, comedy, there's a lot of bullshit in it, and then jokes are subjective. But pictures, you can, if the model is happy and they say, this photographer treated me great, did a great shoot, and the product is good, people want to hire you.
Yeah, you're right. It is. Comedy is a weird thing, too, where, and especially because comedy doesn't translate across the board. Like, yeah, you said it's subjective. Like, it's pretty much what's happening to you, except for you are crossing over. But, like, let's say I'm the most famous comic in America. It doesn't mean that they're going to think I'm funny in Europe, for example.
100%.
They might just not get it.
Yeah, definitely. So true. And in photography, though, to an extent, to a very successful extent.
I mean, it's kind of like...
It's like, this is a great shot. Yeah. The composition is great. There's rules.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying? Exactly.
There's no rule to a joke
like,
or
you
a
know,
structure.
If a photo's blurry, it's not
it's
a good photo.
This is out of focus. The composition is horrible, and you're putting the weight of attention on the eye in the totally wrong place.
Yeah.
Or no, you're doing a great job. You're delivering great results. But then when you get, I think, to the elite levels, that's when it starts to... You know, the personality mixes in.
Yeah.
You can do a great job and make a lot of money going in. But if you have personality to boot, it actually gets you very far very quickly. Fortunately for my sister, she seems to be, I'm trying to speak as unbiased, I think she's the greatest photographer in the history of mankind.
I want to see some of her stuff.
I'll show you. Her website's incredible.
Awesome.
Let's plug it. SuddenlyMaria.com.
All right.
Check it out.
SuddenlyMaria.com. I need some new photos. Maybe I'll hire her.
Oh, my God. You're family, so you wouldn't hire. But I'm just saying, she's like my favorite person on the world, so maybe I'm biased. Go check it out for yourselves. But she's got something, and I know she does.
Really?
I'm 100%.
I'm excited to see it.
And she's very hardworking. So I think those are great combinations because I meet a lot of talented
people. Is that common of Lebanese people, or are you guys typically pretty hardworking?
Yeah. Lebanese people are hardworking.
Yeah.
They're very entrepreneurial.
Yeah.
You'll see them everywhere.
And I love that.
They love to prove themselves because our parents never believe in us. So we're always trying to, you know what I'm saying? Like, we're always trying to and prove ourselves to like ridiculous extent.
Do your parents accept comedy now that you're very successful?
Oh, my God. Yeah. Now they think I'm the best thing ever.
They're like, this was my idea. Actually.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
I encourage you.
My dad's
you
like,
to do
I
this.
Always told him, follow your dreams. You know, now look at him on the cover of Throwing Stones.
Throwing Stones. How many says?
No. I like making that joke. I'm like, Dad, no, that's the ISIS magazine. It's the wrong magazine. You're giving it away. They're constantly worried. They're drama queens.
Yeah.
Arab people in general, but the like parents, ethnic parents, like Italian parents.
Yeah,
like,
oh, constantly worried. Oh.
Like they will.
If, my mom calls me 5 times a day.
Do you get what I'm saying? Yeah. If you don't answer the phone, it's not like, oh, she's taking a shower. Oh,
yeah,
she's like, it's like
dead.
She's been raped.
Yeah.
And maybe still alive.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah.
But she's died a horrible death.
Yeah. It's 100%
just a terrible,
100% true.
Terrible death.
Mm-hmm.
And none of their stories from their childhood are nice.
Yeah.
If you sit down with your parents, none of them. It's
so
like
true.
I used to get to school, I had to like go through, you know, I had to pick up a car and carry it on my shoulders and then I had to go fight
like,
people
on
the
street.
That's
not even possible.
Yeah, just crazy. And we've heard a million of these stories, but it's true. Like ethnic parents, their whole life is just horrible. It's just hard. Maybe they had a great life,
but
they never
want you. They don't want you to take it for granted.
Have your parents ever? My parents have never told me a great story. My mom has. But that's because she grew up in London. But
actually, I don't think mine either.
Do you get what I'm saying?
My mom tells me the story of her dad. Like, for some reason, her dad was like fascinated with the Manson trial and the Manson murders, and she's told me this story probably 10 times that he drove him past the house where Sharon Tate was murdered, and she still remembers where that she saw. Like,
and that's a great memory for her.
Isn't
that funny?
And but that's why she says that she's like paranoid now because he traumatized her. And he drove him past where the courthouse was, and the ladies had like the swastikas put in their head. I'm like. That's terrible.
That's
your memory?
It's funny because you'll meet all these people, especially parents, who somehow feel that to inspire their kids, they have to constantly tell them this is the worst thing that could ever happen. And it happened to me, and I survived, but only because God was there looking out for me. Like, they make it look so bleak that for you to succeed, literally a deity will
so
have
funny.
To intervene. So you could get groceries.
What
like, my
it?
Mom puts crosses in my car.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Because she
like
says...
Like, just randomly, like, when you open up, like,
I'll find a cross. I'm like,
Mom,
where'd this cross come from? She's like, I just want to make sure you stay safe. What about my driving skills? What about
you're
my
like,
eyesight?
That's the issue. You should be telling me not to text on my phone when I'm driving.
Do you get
like,
what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But no, for her, it's like, well, if you don't have a cross, there's nothing I can do for you. Because this world is such a terrible place. Yeah. And then they're confused why we... grow up like jaunted and a bit like, you know, jaded.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying? Like, we have this weird...
What did your dad... didn't you ask for... I know it's in your jokes, but it's a true story. Didn't you ask for a bike as a kid or something? What's his,
oh, that's...
I love that story.
That story, per se, isn't a literally true story. It's happened with everyone story.
Yeah, oh, really?
Yeah, because Arab parents, much like ethnic parents, if they want to tell a kid no, they're going to say it in a way that's so violent and aggressive that you'll never ask for anything again. Like, they'll
they
make you...
They just want to scare you in general.
In general, like, they'll link everything in the... like, all the problems in the family are because of you, and now you have the audacity to request this on top of everything we're doing to put up with you, you six-year-old demon. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, it's like, don't you see... So like, how could you come and ask me for a bicycle when you clearly can see that your father is going to work from, like, dawn till dusk to bring in this much money, and they share details with you, and we have to pay this much, and you're like, I just want a bike.
You're like, I'm sorry, I asked.
I just want a bike. And there's the civil war in Syria.
I don't even need to eat. I don't even need to eat.
Oh my God, I don't, yeah, and there's this, and then the food, and then you don't even eat your whole sandwich. When I was a kid, I didn't even have sandwiches because bread had cockroaches in it, and we had to take the cockroaches out. And it's just like, by the time they're done saying no.
What does this have to do with the bike?
No, by the time they're done saying no, you forgot that you wanted a bike. And then they'll always at the end, but if you're good in school, maybe we can get you a bike. Like, they'll give you a thing, and you're like,
so
I don't want the
money. Just if I'm good in school?
Yeah, I'm like, I don't want the fucking bike. Like, I don't want the bike. I don't want to be responsible for Armageddon.
Now you're afraid of bikes. Just like have PTSD.
You'll never ride a bike straight again. It's just like, that's how they are. It's like, because they've seen so much hardship, Italians, mm-hmm. which I know is your background, are the same. They've had Mussolini, extremism, fascism, and war. They want to make sure you're prepared for the worst case scenario, because that's what makes them happy.
Yeah.
That their kids are going to be okay. And the only way they can be comfortable that their kids are okay is if they're ready for literally
anything.
Armageddon.
Yeah.
Like literally, and not in a Southern American weird, like Texas build a safe house kind of ridiculous way. Yeah. Like I can survive poisons. Yeah.
But like never feel sorry for yourself.
Never feel sorry for yourself. Yeah. Nothing's going to come easy. If you get something, it's because you were lucky, not because you're good. You got married. He's going to cheat on you. She's going to cheat on you. The kids are going to be terrible. This is what they're going to keep telling you.
Mm-hmm.
And in the Middle East, we have sayings like when you are born, parents will tell you like, congratulations. I'm trying to translate it, but looking forward to the graduation.
Mm-hmm.
When you graduate, they say looking forward to them getting married. When you get married, looking forward to the kids. When you get the kids, looking forward to you staying alive on top of them. When they graduate, looking forward to them burying you. These are sayings.
It's really intense.
Yeah, women, moms will express love by telling the kid to obrine for the woman, which means may you bury me. Like, I love you so much. I can't live without you. I hope I die before you. In one word. That's the culture.
Jesus Christ.
It's a
so
very
intense.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
Even when, like, I'm with my girlfriend or something, if I want to.
Sometimes you just don't want to hear that kind of thing. You're just like, I don't want to think about death. Like,
you don't think
about,
but
you,
that's
second.
The dangerous thing. It's, you don't even think, it's become a part of you. Like, I'll look at my girlfriend like, and if I want to tell her I love her, like, I really love this woman.
Yeah.
I won't say, like, I love you so much. I'll say, if I'm going to translate literally what I'll say in Arabic, it would be, may you bury me. You take my breath away. I wish I could rip your arms off and beat you to death.
Do you really say that?
Yeah, but it sounds so endearing. And the woman will be like, I love you too.
Perhaps don't date American women and
well,
I
it would get lost in translation. Yeah. Here I just say, your eyes are very pretty. And I'd love to look at them for the rest of my life. And then when they're married, I'll start using my Arabic things. It's like, I love you so much. I can't wait to punch you in the gut. It's going to be so, oh. I just want to punch you sometime. But Americans do that too when they see babies.
Yeah, they're
like
so
oh,
cute,
I could eat them.
Yeah.
I could eat them up. Yeah, but the Arabs are like, I could eat them and torture them and like throw them off the balcony and then drive over him. This kid is so adorable.
Take it a little more extreme. You know, yeah. Do you normally date Lebanese girls or Arabic girls?
When I was in the Middle East, obviously. Yeah. But when I came here, I loved dating American women because, holy shit, they're so sweet.
Do you have a girlfriend now?
I do.
Who I feel like I never hear about you dating people. So, yeah, you might probably
well,
you
I mean,
have a girlfriend. Because in
it,
the comedy scene, everyone knows when people are dating.
Right? I'm more of a private kind of person.
Yeah, that's good.
But I dated American women, obviously, before this girl, who's Lebanese, who I met the day after I told my parents there's no way in hell I'm ever dating a Lebanese girl again. Because I was like, I've been to America, and I don't know what the, like, this is ridiculous. Like, these women are amazing.
Yeah.
And like, women like you, women like, because not only will you be beautiful, but you'll also be very nice.
Yeah, where are Lebanese women
in the Middle East,
nice?
If you're beautiful, it's like holy, like drama, high maintenance, like
we're like
just
people,
like
bow down,
insanity.
To them.
And then I was like, American women are like, because they like work and they like understand bills and responsibility. Like it takes a lot of pressure off you. Like I don't have to. She can be happy if we go grab a beer.
Yeah.
Whereas if I'm in Lebanon, I have to take her out for like sushi at like Nobu, like just to get her like to say like, oh, that was a nice evening.
Maybe I'll adopt the Lebanese way.
Listen, you find a Lebanese guy, you're gonna be
people.
Good.
I'm like, we can just do whatever.
I take an American girl out.
Buffet,
I'd be like,
I don't care.
What time do I pick you up? And they're like, from where? I'm like, from your house. And they're like, why are you gonna pick me up from my house? And for me, if I even asked a girl in Lebanon out and didn't offer to take her up, it's like, what, are you think I'm gonna go out with you? Like, not only do you pick me up, but you drive me back home. Like, it's a do you get what
you come in, you meet my dad.
Yeah, you meet my parent. Like, this is how it's gonna happen. Like, it's just so.
How did you meet your girlfriend?
At a party.
Like with other Lebanese people, or did she just happen to be that?
No, she was just there, and I saw her, and then it was just like it was one of those
you
tunnel
like,
vision
yep.
moments.
That's awesome.
Yeah, where I was like, oh, shit, I'm screwed. Negative kind of person. Yeah. Not like, oh, I... Oh.
Yeah, like, god damn it.
I was like, oh, motherfucker. Like, that was kind of the... I remember from that era of conditioning.
Not like, how nice. You're just like, fuck, yeah. Now I got to take care of
it. It's
kind of
like, you're hot. Do you want to go out? Jesus yeah. Christ, yeah. This is so
like,
shitty.
You're like angry.
It was like, it was a weird feeling.
Now you're fucking my life up.
This is horrible. It's like, are we going to, like, have kids? And oh, you're faithful? Fuck. Like, it's like...
nice and pretty. Ah, oh, shit.
It's so true. But I mean, in general, that was like, I'm not saying all Lebanese women are high. Yeah. I mean, I don't want people to think that, but it used to be like, I just think American women get a bad rep.
Mm-hmm. About like, for what being?
Because American women in the movies are always overly dramatic.
Yeah.
And you see a lot of, so I'm growing up in Lebanon watching, I don't know, and any of these movies with a woman in it. And it's always this crazy ass, meaty, clingy. Do you get what I'm saying? Like,
yeah,
that's cliche character. It's the feminist movement that's trying to push back against that right now. It exists. I mean, that's what we would see. What was that movie with Mel Gibson where he, What Women Know?
What Women Want.
What Women Want.
Yeah.
The women were batshit crazy in that movie. Like, most of them.
I remember it, but not totally.
Yeah. Which was good because that's kind of like, like, it gets you ready as a man for.
So you're just like, oh, maybe I shouldn't date them.
It's basically movies made by Arabs. Because it's like the worst case scenario in all of the thing. And then so that's funny. What you're ready for. And then I came here and I'm like, these are very nice.
Really,
and then
nice.
Like I broke up with her. She didn't burn my house down.
Yeah. The American girl you dated?
Yeah, I was.
You were expecting.
I dated several. I was here
she
for like.
She slashed my tires.
She slashed my tires. We stayed in touch afterwards. She didn't show up at my house at 3 a.m. Like it was a very. You know what
I'm friends with all my exes.
And then I went out with another girl. She didn't get killed by the other one. Nobody tried to rock the cradle. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, nobody tried to... What was that movie? The Hand That Rocks the Cradle?
Yeah.
Like, holy shit. Like, that's the... Like, I was like, these American women are insane.
You know, your parents really geared you for worst case scenario.
I'm telling you, these were the movies we'd watch. And then every time there'd be a great woman, she'd get killed. There's never
like
been a
movie?
Great woman in movie.
Like in The Godfather?
Yeah, like The Godfather killed. Mel Gibson in William Wallace. What was that movie?
Braveheart. Yeah.
She gets killed. All these women, you get a great woman. She's like, oh, she loves him. She's such a good wife. She stands by her husband. Killed. Horrible woman. Makes it to the end.
Like a Penelope Cruz in Blue.
Yeah, like every time.
She was great. And then she was a psycho. And
right? So if you're a young girl, you're like, I'm just going
to
be a bitch so I can live.
Yeah.
Hey, we found parallels. I never thought about this, but we found parallels with Arab thinking in American cinema.
That is really funny. How are women portrayed cinema where you're from
in the Middle East?
Yeah,
Lebanese cinema and Egyptian cinema differ greatly from there really is in Saudi Arabian cinema. There is now. But
do you guys have entertainment at all?
In Lebanon, it's, I swear to God, and I'm not exaggerating, the Los Angeles party scene and the New York party scene is pathetic.
Yeah,
compared to Lebanon.
We close early here.
You close
not
early
York, but
B, the entertainment value is very weak, unless you're going to watch a show.
Yeah.
Incredible if you're going to watch Broadway.
Are
you kidding me? But I mean, like, just normal go grab a drink kind of stuff. In Lebanon,
it does
just
get old quickly. It's like, but we don't have anything cool.
No,
here.
And then you can't, like, walk out of the club with your drink in your hand or anything. Mm-hmm. In Lebanon, I can walk out,
you
cross
can
the
Vegas.
Street, see a police officer, give him a drink, walk into the next. Do you get what I'm saying? Like,
see, I got to live in a place like that.
Beautiful. Yeah. It's just wonderful. And then the party starts at 11 in the evening. You cruise all the way through to like 7 a.m.
Yeah.
You're buzzing alcohol. It's a good vibe.
I'm people not good at staying awake that late, though. But maybe I'm just
You get used to
I'm
it.
Not prepared for it.
Yeah, you're not prepared for it.
Yeah,
when I first came here, I was like, I'm going to go out. We're going to hit the town.
Yeah.
I got right. I took a nap. That's what you do there. You take a nap in the evening.
Yeah.
You wake up at like 9, shower, you get dressed. You jump in the car.
I start drinking at like noon here.
Yeah,
because
this
I know
ridiculous.
I got to be in bed by
I went
like
out. I'm like,
midnight.
Why is everything closed?
Yeah.
What is this? The only option is like a Wendy's? This is horrible. So in terms of Lebanon entertainment, it's insane. And just DJs.
Is it expensive there to go
no,
out?
No, that's the thing. It can be. You can drop $150,000 and you can drop $15 and you might have more fun dropping the $15.
Really?
Yeah. It's top notch for everyone. It's like AAA quality everywhere. It's a services place. They're geared
like
towards
you said, like big tourism and stuff too.
And it's the culture. It's hospitality. You take care of the guests. You make sure they have everything they need. That's why here it's hard for me to sell tickets to my people because they're used to when an Arab comes over, they don't go online and buy tickets. The promoter calls them, hooks them up, gives them a
makes
discount.
Them feel special.
Don't have to pay now. Pay me later. Sends them the tickets to their house. Do you need a car? Like, it's like set up. you get to the venue, you're like royalty.
I gotta go to London.
And here I'm like, go to nimmercomedy.com and buy tickets. And they're like, fuck no.
They're like, so rude.
why am I yeah. buying tickets?
Why am I going to my way for you?
My cousin knows you. Yeah. I'm not going to get an invite. That's so you know funny. What I say? Like, it's just.
That is crazy. Yeah, you guys, I need to go there. It sounds.
Rachel, you'd absolutely love it. It's an adventure.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people love it because it gives you a sense of independence, of adventure. Mm-hmm.
That's cool.
Yeah.
What's next for you? So you just finished a tour.
Just finished the tour. We're definitely going to do another tour.
Mm-hmm.
More cities.
Will you do all new material?
Already. So the way I do it is, if you watched me, you watched the show in Los Angeles. Mm-hmm. If you watched the show in Irvine, which is still the same tour.
Yeah.
You'd only recognize about half of it.
Oh, really? So you change it up.
I change on the road and yeah. I start to kind of shift into the new show.
Mm-hmm.
So now that I'm done material. And that half, I'll try a different half in different shows.
Uh-huh.
And then when I start the tour again, it'll be a brand new show for whoever was in that city. By the time I get back to Irvine,
mm-hmm.
it's going to be a brand new show for you in Irvine.
Yeah.
But if you were six shows ago, you might have heard it. Do you get what I'm saying? So yeah, it's like yeah. it's like a living, breathing organism that keeps changing. But the name of the show changes.
Do you get where people want to hear like your classics mm-hmm. that came to? Mm-hmm. Do they get mad when you don't do it?
Why didn't you? Yeah. They come up and they're like, but I'm proud to say that my shows are usually good enough that they don't get mad. They just say, I wanted him to hear or her to hear that joke. And I say, go online. I post
it. That is usually how it goes, where like you bring someone to a show and you're like, you're going to love this joke. I love this comic. And then they don't end up doing it. You're like,
But then if you do here's the nice thing, the funny thing. Mm-hmm. If you do those jokes, then they start saying you repeat material.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. They don't have anything new.
So I'd rather they complain that I didn't repeat stuff.
Yeah, that is probably better. And then they complain
that I do. Yeah. I do a new special every time I tour.
Okay.
So the last one was about perspective, the one you saw. Mm-hmm. It was based on the power of perspective.
Yeah.
The next one is based on the power of hate.
Okay.
And how beautiful and wonderful and healing and bringing together hate can really be.
Explain.
My whole understanding of life is that love is not the answer.
Okay.
This whole love trumps hate is the biggest bullshit I've ever heard in my life. Love doesn't trump hate. There isn't war in Syria because people excessively love each other. It's not like, I love you so much, I'm going to kill your family.
Even though you basically did just say that.
Yeah. We just say it. We don't actually do
it. Yeah, you don't
mean it. It's kind of like, okay, let me put it for you to you this way. If you were fat, this would have been easier for me to.
It's okay. I used to be.
Did you love being fat?
I didn't notice. I thought I was awesome. I didn't know there was an issue.
Okay. So you never had a feeling, I'm going to try to find something that I can relate to with you. Okay. When you started doing comedy here and you had to go, we discussed this. You said, I had to go to get time. I had to basically like hustle just to get time and whatever. Yeah. And I said, power over your career. Did you love the fact that you didn't get time?
No.
Or did you hate the fact that you didn't get time?
I didn't like it.
Yeah, you didn't like it.
Yeah.
And you decided, I don't like it. I want to like this career. Mm-hmm. To do that, I need to flip this thing which I don't like.
Mm-hmm.
So what I focus on is that you have to identify what you hate and then take a look at it and say, you have two options. Mm-hmm. Either you just complain and bitch about it like so many people we know, or you do something about it.
Yeah.
Doing something about it means teaching people how to hate.
Uh-huh.
If I come and I say, I hate, Jesus Christ, let me think about something. If I hate, if I'm Palestinian and I hate Israel, or if I'm Israeli and I hate Palestine, why? That's the first thing. Why do you hate? Learn how to hate.
Yeah.
I hate them because they're building settlements. Mm-hmm. I hate them because they're terrorizing my people.
Yeah.
Both sides of the table. Okay, what are you going to do about it? I want to stop the settlements. Let's take the Palestinian side. How are you going to stop the settlements? Why are the settlements still going on? Because there's too much support for them to do it. Nobody can stand in their way. Okay, so we need to develop a power to stand in their way. No power is going to stand against them. Mm-hmm. So I have to get enough power and sway within them for them to stop it. So I need to be able to reach out to them to do that. So I need to be an effective communicator. So therefore, I should. Now you're taking your hate and you're learning how to hate and how to overcome.
That's a good point. Okay, you know what I'm saying? Yeah.
Same thing for the Israelis.
Yeah.
Why are these people blowing themselves up from Hamas or whatever?
Yeah.
Why are they doing that? Because Hamas is popular there. Why is Hamas popular there? They're a terrorist organization. In my eyes, as an Israeli, they're a terrorist organization. How can I get them to understand they're not a terrorist organization? We have a miscommunication here. Maybe if I did this, maybe if I worked that, maybe if I... Now you're taking your hate and you're turning it into something good.
Mm-hmm.
I hate that Trump won. I hate that Hillary won, let's say, or that Hillary might win. How am I going to overcome that? How am I going to overcome the fact that my father voted for Trump?
So basically the opposite is almost just giving up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But if I come and I say, oh, it's going to be fine, love Trump's hate. No, it doesn't.
Yeah.
One man with a gun can control a crowd of 1,000 people.
Mm-hmm.
That tells you everything you need to know.
Yeah.
You need to be ready for that.
Yeah.
You need to be ready to disarm the guy with the gun.
Yeah.
Not to look at him and open your arms.
Yeah, be like, oh, I'm sorry.
And I'm not saying don't turn the other cheek.
Yeah.
A lot of people say this. So, you know, that saying, turn the other cheek, forgive those. That's actually great advice because that's a different thing. That's called circle of violence.
Yeah.
When somebody messes up with you, retaliating is just going to keep going back and forth and escalate out of control.
Yeah.
These are two separate things.
Yeah.
It's about understanding. It's kind of like you know, wushu or something where you take in what your opponent is throwing at you and use that momentum to throw it back at them.
Mm-hmm.
You have to absorb it. You have to accept it. You have to accept the fact that people hate.
Mm-hmm.
You have to accept the fact that there is hate in the world and be okay with it.
Yeah.
It's okay to hate. You know what I'm saying? It's
yeah.
totally fine. It is totally acceptable for me to tell you right now that in Mississippi, there are people who hate black people.
Yeah.
This is not going to come as a shock to anyone.
Yeah, no.
And there are black people who hate white people in Mississippi.
Mm-hmm.
Why? Maybe because of the way they hate black people. I could go into details all day, but what's important is that there is hate there.
Yeah.
What are we going to do about it? Just go and say, you shouldn't hate.
Yeah.
The fuck have I just done? You should love.
Yeah.
Just hold them.
Stop saying words. You're not even.
People are dying.
Yeah.
Syria. There are people dying in Syria. And we're sitting here having meetings about how we should, you know, oh, send love and send your prayer. And what are we going to do? You hate the fact that people are dying in Syria?
Mm-hmm.
Do something about it.
Yeah.
So in my comedy, I say when you see a 4-year-old or a 5-year-old, don't ask them, what do you want to be when you grow up?
Mm-hmm.
Because he's a 4-year-old. What is he or she going to say? I want to be an astronaut.
Yeah.
You're not going to be an astronaut. You're an Arab. They're never going to let a terrorist in space. That's what I say. People laugh. But then I go, ask them, what do you hate?
Mm-hmm.
And then this always happens. You'll have one person who's like, no, like a parent.
Yeah.
And I'm like, why no? Ask your kid, what do they hate? They're going to say one of two things. If they come and they say, they're probably going to say, I hate going to bed early.
Yeah.
If they come and they say, I hate the infidel America or something, well, then that's a good warning sign and maybe you should go and get them checked out.
Exactly.
You get what I'm saying?
Yeah, it's true.
But I'm like, what are they going to say? They hate going to bed early. Mm-hmm. Well, you live in my house, but I don't want to go to bed early. Well, you're going to need your own house.
Yeah.
How do I get my own house? Well, you're going to need a job. How do I get a job? Right now, we're functioning and using this hate to get this kid into a great place.
Mm-hmm.
Embrace the hate. Mm-hmm. Let there be hate. It's totally acceptable. Humans hate. Stop
yeah.
acting like it's this negative, terrible thing.
Mm-hmm.
People go to the gym and get in great shape because they hate their bodies. People go like, yeah, dude, yeah. I was fat as fuck. I hated it. So I went to the gym. I got books. I researched it. I got into amazing shape. And then when I did, I decided to get fat again. And I had so much fun.
Yeah.
And I didn't hate myself. Because
I did it on purpose. It was
because I did it on purpose and I knew how to get out of it.
Yeah.
So I had the answer.
Like,
I just hated the fact that I didn't
stand
on steady ground. I didn't know the solution to my problem.
Mm-hmm.
I found the solution to my problem. I was like, great, now I can eat donuts again.
Yeah.
And then I went.
It's just about the power of knowing what you can do.
Just to
you like to take everything in your own hands.
But before then, every time I'd be like, I hate that I'm fat. If somebody comes up and says, no, you should love yourself and you should love your body. No, you shouldn't. You should hate your body. You have a disgusting body. You're overweight. You have a higher risk of heart failure.
Yeah.
This is not something good.
Yeah.
But if you tell me I'm fat and I love it, fucking high five because I'm not that fat, but a bit chubby, overweight. I love it too. Maybe we can relate, but we both love donuts. Let's go.
Yeah.
But I'm not going to go to somebody who tells me I hate that I'm fat or I hate something and tell them, oh, you shouldn't hate. You should love. No, you should hate.
Yeah, if you're unhappy with it.
If you're unhappy, you're unhappy.
Yeah.
No amount of self-acceptance is going to get over that. What I'm going to ask the fat person
is, I hate when people complain about their reality but do nothing about it.
Excuses are the bane of my existence.
Yeah.
The bane of my, I would have been so successful, but
okay.
There's no, I feel like an Arab parent whenever somebody comes up to me and gives me excuses. I'm like, I built a comedy scene during, you know, war and stuff.
Yeah.
What's your excuse again?
Yeah, exactly. I'm sorry you're not getting shows. Like,
we did it in an underground shelter because there was a bombing outside. But no, please tell me about how difficult it is to get a spot again when there's hundreds of comedians who succeed and actually support you, and there's an industry and people don't look at you and try to kill your family as a result of your jokes. But please tell me about your life and your hardship.
Yeah.
So it's just like those little things is where I'm like the father. It's like, I used to tell a joke.
But that kind of stuff drives me crazy.
Yep.
I honestly hate victim-y people. I cannot handle it. Unless you truly have been through something terrible. But if you're just like, I don't know why I'm not doing better.
You know,
it's like, I don't know. Maybe be better. I don't like
Rachel,
work
it is
harder.
The worst thing when somebody tells you how traumatized they are by something. And they're clearly traumatized. But it's clearly
so
not traumatizing.
Yeah.
There's you I don't get it. A guy.
He didn't text you back?
Didn't text you back. Like, and this is the end of the world. That's your threshold. That's where it ends. Or you sat on the tarmac.
You need to go get medicated now.
Your plane got canceled and it ended everything. That's how fragile your existence is. That little thing just ruined everything. Trump got elected and you can't go to school.
You have to have a crying group.
You have to have a crying group.
Do you know that they had those? They had safe areas on campus.
What would have happened if somebody killed your uncle or something, like, in the family? Like, what?
Just want to go. You're an idiot.
Toughen the fuck up, because I live in a world. This is in my last special, what I was doing with perspective, where a guy could own a factory with 300 employees in Syria on a Tuesday.
Yeah.
And then a month later, on a Tuesday, could be making Subway sandwiches in Escondido in San Diego or whatever. That's the reality I know.
Yeah.
But your reality is so sheltered that for you, in a cataclysmic nuclear level event, is that the dude you didn't want to win won. Holy shit. You are not ready for what's coming.
This is not a good sign.
No. You had Italian parents, so I know that you're set.
Yeah,
but I've met American kids who've had American parents who read books to learn how to bring them up. These are the worst people.
Oh yeah, I know what you're saying. Yeah,
don't read books. Ask your parents how to do it, because they're going to give you terrible advice, and you should follow it because it works.
Learn from it.
My grandmother was like, if you're tired of your baby crying, just put some whiskey on your finger.
I know people like that.
And rub it on the
make him pass out a little
the
bit.
The kid's gum.
Yeah.
Because my mom was like, you were so good with Nimmer. He never used to cry. She's like, I just used to give him half a sleeping pill or something. Horrible. This is horrendous. This is the worst thing. But these are the same people that when the principal in my school in San Diego told my dad that I needed Ritalin, my dad said, I'm not going to give my kid. I'm never going to medicate my kid because he needs to learn self-discipline. And he said, well, how's he going to learn self-discipline if he has hyperactivity? My dad said, I'll just beat it out of him. And he proceeded. Was it abuse? I was never abused. Yeah, but it was just,
I deserved it.
One or two good smackings. And then ever since then, my dad would look at me and I would shit my pants. But guess what? I never got on Ritalin.
Yeah.
I'm not addicted to medications or opiates. I don't need something to function. Yeah. I don't need a cup of coffee or I'm going to die.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying it's because my dad beat me. I'm saying it's because my dad didn't put me on Ritalin.
Yeah.
What he did afterwards, maybe there's a better approach. But hey, halfway there.
Well, they didn't baby you.
No, they didn't.
People that are babied are not prepared for life.
You're gonna get fired from your job. What are you gonna do? Mm-hmm. Cry about it? You're gonna end up homeless if you're like that.
It's almost like when you take too many antibiotics, your immune system doesn't work as well. When you baby someone too much, they don't know how to handle real life. So everything is a huge deal.
100%. And I'm the kind of guy who's like, you say antibiotics are bad, stop babying yourself, take antibiotics. So there's also different perspectives.
Yeah. No, but I'm just saying in general.
I know what you're saying is right. Yeah. But I'm the kind of guy who's like, you have a cold, you should take an antibiotic.
Yeah.
So I'm like the guy who goes nuclear on every option.
Well, if you're sick, go to the doctor. Don't complain about it.
If you're sick, take antibiotics. That's what I say. You got a headache? You need some antibiotics. And everyone's like, you shouldn't take an antibiotic. I'm like, listen.
You're like a paranoid.
I can assure you that you will annihilate whatever's going on with an antibiotic.
Works. Yeah. I mean, that's what it's designed for.
And then they go, but if it's too often, then it'll be build resistance. And I'm like, well, that's the medical community's problem. Right now, there's a solution. Yeah. And I'm 100% wrong. There's nothing. What I just told you is the worst thing, but it's what I believe.
Well, but eventually, maybe it'll
And I'm going to teach my kid that, and it's going to have horrible results.
It's not a good.
It's going to be terrible, and they're going to grow up probably telling their kids that my father was a great guy, but he was such an idiot when he came to antibiotics. So they're going to do
everyone
a better
job. Everyone has a scary story about their parents. Like, they were great, but they really,
They dropped the ball here.
Yeah. They didn't do a good job on this.
They didn't do a good job here. I remember, my dad advised me once on the, I was dating this girl. And he gave me advice on something to do. Don't take her here, take her. It was the worst advice I ever got. And I ended up I wasn't getting married or anything. It never worked out with this girl. Yeah. She was so hot.
Yeah.
We were in college. I had to see her all the time, and I couldn't. Never date her. And I was like, that's because of my dad.
Yeah.
But all it taught me was sometimes you don't listen to your dad.
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. I'm not sure I would take dating advice from my parents.
No, but at the time.
Just be really nice.
My dad went all the way.
Super nice.
Like in my head, I was like, my dad went so far, he got married and had a family. So obviously.
Yeah. Yeah. Obviously he knows what he's doing. Yeah.
What he's doing. This guy's the man. I was so stupid.
It was a simpler time.
I realized that maybe it doesn't apply 35 years later.
Yeah, it's a little different.
You know, when I was with your mom and there was six other guys in the village.
She had to choose me.
You know,
there was a war approaching. She wanted to get married.
Maybe
she was going to die. That doesn't
apply.
Well,
in my mom's
now.
Case, it was almost the other way around. But yeah, something like that.
That's so funny. Well, it's been so much fun talking to you.
This
thank
has
you
been one of the
thank
funnest podcasts I've been on. Thank you for having me.
45 minutes out of your way to come here.
I'm Lebanese. This is a.
Like,
it's,
you're like, I walked.
I walked.
I walked to school.
There were no bombs on the way. It was a nice drive. It was nobody died. It was very fruitful.
So funny. Well,
all
tell everyone where they can find you.
In the look to the heavens. NEMRcomedy.com.
Is that what's your like Twitter and Instagram and stuff?
NEMR comedy for everything.
Oh, it is. Oh, okay. Awesome.
Instagram, Facebook. If you go to the website, all the links are there, mm-hmm. but nobody does that. So if you go to Facebook, Twitter, I swear to God, I can't believe I paid money to have a website. But if you go to any social network,
no one goes to mine either.
Whatsoever, just put NEMR comedy on there. YouTube, Instagram, Snapchat, Twitter,
perfect.
Facebook.
And buy tickets for his shows. He's not going to send a car, give you a personal phone call.
Not yet.
Not yet.
If I become super rich, I'll be doing that, like, for sure. Come to my show. I give you a car. I take care of you.
Cost a lot of
good.
Money.
This is very good. Come over. That'd be fun. I'll even change my accent.
I would go.
When I make those calls.
Even if the person wasn't funny, I would be like.
Yeah, I'll definitely go. It's a free. Yeah, this guy.
I'll go anywhere for, like, a free appetizer and a cocktail.
Let alone
a free show. I honestly have a publicist so I can go to events and eat and drink for free. I mean, it actually cancels out completely because
I have a cousin for that. So we all have I have a cousin who's a DJ who knows a guy who has a dude.
Perfect.
We all have our people.
Yeah.
You know, and I probably paid more to the cousin than you have to the publicist in favors over the years. But
he doesn't even get anything that great. You're just like,
no,
they're
at this point in time, I'm more powerful than him and I can do better for him.
He's still paying for it.
But he's still the dude. That I go to, I'm like, yo, can you get me a reservation at this place, which I could call and they would give me a better
table. He's like, it'll cost you $100. I'm like, oh, okay, sure.
Oh, they don't do it like that. They're much wiser. They'll just call you like a while later. Oh, you know, I have a wedding for a friend. Could you come and, you know,
do
45 minutes for me?
Oh, my God.
Nobody I know talks like that, by the way. But it just.
I hope that.
I think every time somebody asks a favor, they should put that voice on, even in America. Mm-hmm.
It makes sense.
Even if it's like Larry from Omaha, he should be like, you know, I was calling the other day and I wanted to tell you that maybe could you come and help me move my furniture?
I got to get that accent
I will
down.
Feed you peanut butter and jelly.
That's not worth it.
You see, but in the Middle East where there's war.
But it convinced me. I was like, oh, but he said it in such a nice
such
way.
The accent was so.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I should.
That's the accent of a guy who's been through so much that peanut butter and jelly means something. I'm going to go for it.
Yeah. I can't disrespect him.
No, I can't. Yeah. He has peanut butter and jelly. Back in my day, we only had the peanut.
We would put it
no
in
butter,
between the sandwich.
No jelly, just the peanut.
We would smash it ourselves.
And we would bake it butter in our teeth. It's just some weird ass story. Then I would spit it on bread and then we
and
would
give it to my wife.
Give it to my wife because she's more important than me. That's why I have small feet. Like a weird, just a weird, surly weird
so
guilt trip that brings everybody in board.
You're just like, oh.
You loved your mother more than me? Well, guess why I have small feet? Because I fed her so that you could love her more than me. But please, love
her
more than me. I don't mind. It's okay because what am I at the end? I am an empty vessel for you to exist and have fun. Go have fun. Go with your friends. Go play.
They're
no, it's okay.
Martyrs.
Go. I can't wait to have kids.
So
I'm going to ruin
gonna
their
torture
lives.
Them.
I'm going to ruin their lives.
So funny. Well, thank you so much for doing this.
Thanks for having me.
All right. Bye.
Bye.